I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central Show. TCS is brought to you by MTN Business. Visit them at mtnbusiness.co.za to learn more. And we thank them for partnering with the show to bring us these great interviews. Now, I'm looking forward to catching up next with Herman Maritz. Herman, in case you don't know, is alongside Dan Wells, one half of the team that built the Eskom Sapush load shedding app, which I believe is just called ESP now. Herman is joining me via a video call now. Herman, it's great to see you again. How are things?
Great to see you again, Duncan. Like I told you before the call, like one of these type of interviews are always a bit like scary for me. Like it's like a roller coaster, but I'm happy to see you again. And I think I spoke to you last time. I said to you, when I was like starting my career, you were on this podcast called Zeday Tech Show. And I always heard you, and I told myself, like driving in the car, one day I would like to talk to Duncan and like be one of those guys, you know, being interviewed by you. So when you messaged me and said, hey, okay, we talk again, I was like, yes. But then then it's like nervous the rest of the time. So yeah, I'm looking forward to chat to you again.
It's amazing how many people remember the ZA Tech Show. It was a very long time ago now, but I still get people coming up to me and say, I loved that show. We should look to do it again at some point. Get the guys together around a table and record an episode.
I think it would be great to catch up. Like, I would listen to it, definitely.
Okay, awesome. Well, we'll consider that. Great. Well, Herman, I thought it'd be a good time to catch up. We're about 4.5 months, I think it is now, into the suspension of load shedding. Were you surprised as I was at how load shedding just suddenly seemed to end? It seemed like we were in a stage six doom loop at earlier this year, and then suddenly there was nothing. Did it surprise you how quickly it all ended?
It did. It did. Actually, I was also very surprised. Like I thought it would be okay, cool. We're going to go like stage two for a while, and then it could go away. Of course, I knew it would go away at some point, but I also didn't expect it to go away just before winter. So everyone was like, oh, it's because of the elections. I'm like, maybe that makes sense, because it did go away very, very suddenly just before the elections. But yeah, it's been great. Like honestly, Dan and I, like people always say like, oh, you like when it's load shedding. Like people even, like I saw some jokes about people saying, oh, we are the ones causing load shedding because of the ad revenue. That doesn't make sense. But I think it was surprising for us. But also, yeah, we don't miss it. Like if I can put it like as directly as that, like it's good. Like everyone's vibe is just a bit better without it. So yeah, I'm glad it's gone. And I honestly hope it doesn't come back.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, there are a few companies and industries out there that actually are sort of counter cyclical. And when load shedding goes away, they don't do so well. I'm thinking of solar installation companies, for example. So there are guys who've kind of geared up for these rolling blackouts, and when they go away, it's not great news for them. But I'm sure it's allowed you guys to work on some projects and not be scrambling all the time to update schedules and everything else. What have you been up to with specifically with ESP in the last few months?
Yeah, well, we're getting much more sleep. That's for one. Like with load shedding, it was always a bit like, you know, there's so many things happening. And as you know, a lot of times it's like middle of the night, like literally 2 a.m., there's a realization at Eskom, oh, we don't have enough electricity for the grid. So then announce in the middle of the night. And then we would wake up and go and do that manually. It was really hard to automate that. And I think it still is because of the sort of ad hocness with it. But yeah, we knew load shedding is going to go away at some point. I think that's also why we actually rebranded from Eskom Sapush to ESP a while ago. It's like we want to get away from just load shedding and just being Eskom to also being other things. And I guess we'll talk about it a bit more later. So we've been, of course, still keeping tabs on load shedding. As soon as like if there's going to be load shedding, we would like to let everyone know first, right? So for us, it's still a main thing to keep sort of up with that. And our relationship with Eskom, I should always say informal relationship with Eskom is still informal, but very strong. So we've got some really cool contacts there. I think a lot of people, of course, hate Eskom for what load shedding was. And like even the people that work there are bad. Trust me, some of those people that work there are amazing. Like they're better people than I am. Like I would not have been through this at Eskom. I would have quit my job Like, it's just, I have no way that those people stay there, like, such respect for them. And they pulled through, right? So I think it also shows stamina and sort of just grit from people working there. So we've got some strong relationships there, which is great. We didn't have that a few years ago. And informal relationships, to be clear. Sure. And then we, of course, keeping tabs of load reduction. Load reduction is something that ESCOM and also some municipalities are implementing. This is mainly in areas where a lot of electricity is being stolen. So people think, oh, load reduction is just a new word for load shedding. No, it's like there's illegal connections and people are stealing electricity. And the only way for ESCOM, who is a business, to sort of save a little bit is to do stuff like load reduction and try to disincentivize that sort of behavior. So I think so we also do load reduction in that for many areas, not all areas. It's a bit more complicated than load shedding. There isn't like standard schedules, but we try our best to notify people before with load reduction. And then, of course, then outages, that's something that we've been focusing a lot. Like, if you do have a power outage, a lot of times people go like, okay, it must be load shedding, right? So we're trying to educate people about what is load shedding, what is outage, what is load shedding, what is a planned outage, what is sort of maintenance, and what is an unplanned maintenance also happens, right? Mm-hmm. So this is some sort of the things that we focus on. And then lastly, which is probably my favorite part of what we're working on, is we're working on using the reach that we have now. We've got only over 20 million installs, right? So we've got a large part of the sort of African community we have as users. And of course, they're uninstalling the app now. It's I get it. Like, I understand that completely. But we're trying to see if we can use this reach that we have to give people also a voice inside their communities, like using it as a community resource. So a simple example is like, my bin wasn't collected. Was your bin collected? Or my dog is missing. Can you help me find my dog? And trying to get those messages out there and get people to help people. But more specifically is also just using it as load shedding. Like, if there's an outage and you know why there's an outage, you can also inform people. And that's something that I like a lot for many reasons, mainly because my dream job was always working at Mixit, right? When I was in university, I was like, there was Mixit. And I was like, oh, that is like the best job. So for me, it's sort of like that. It's, of course, not exactly the same. But the chat and the sort of community part of it, I'm enjoying immensely.
But 20 million installs, that's quite a – so it must be one of the most, if not the most successful app in South African history.
And of course, installs is always a tricky one to measure, right? Because people install and uninstall, and how Google Play is tracking it, I have questions. And also, iOS App Store also tracks it a bit differently, in my opinion. But yeah, I think for me, the thing that I focus on a lot is the daily active users. And our max daily active users, like, capped out at like 5 million daily active users. And that, I mean, that was stage 6 and stuff like that. That's not now. Mm-hmm. But for me, that's the benchmark, right? That in our yearly goals, which we set, it's like, that's the thing we want to push further. Of course, without load shedding, that's really tough. But that's still my hero metric.
And you mentioned the user engagement and the community engagement. You've had, I think it's called Ask My Street feature in the app for some time. Are people still actively using that and engaging and talking to each other about service delivery issues?
Definitely, right. That's our main usage right now, is that. And we're around 500,000 daily active users now. So it's still a lot of daily active users, and I'm very proud of that. And we did change it a little bit. We moved away from Ask My Street as something, because we realized just asking your street, like the name Ask My Street, didn't really help our users. Like, because asking is not the same as telling. So it's more like, tell your street now than ask my street. So we dropped the My Street thing probably like completely. And if you go into the app now, you'll see that the chats are actually inside of your load shedding area. So if you had a load shedding area, say, for example, Stellenbosch, you would see like all the chats in Stellenbosch and everyone's talking in Stellenbosch. And that's been well received, not just in like our NPS surveys and all of these sort of things, but also just in metrics. So I'm quite happy with that change in direction and pivot that we did.
Yeah. I know.
Just maybe to explain that a little bit further, we couldn't really, like, there was two ideas that we had. One was we would launch Ask My Street and it would be super successful. And then we would sort of split it out and start a separate app. We realized that we didn't have that sort of stickiness for people to install a new app. People do not like to install new apps. That was the one part. And the other part is just like we thought people would be, we would get enough traction with people asking questions, and it just wasn't. People are more to the app for getting information and launching, integrating the chats in your load shedding area while there's load shedding. It's really tough. People would like, no, why are you becoming a chat app now in the middle of load shedding? So this sort of break in load shedding has also given us the opportunity to integrate that in a way that is a little bit softer and much more seamless with load shedding rather than just getting that sort of friction of, why are you showing me chats inside the load shedding app? Well, you should stay in your lane. We get that quite a lot. Like, you should stay in your lane. It's like, if we stay in your, in our lane, we're not going to be a successful business. You know what I mean?
Everyone's got an opinion, I guess. But 500,000 daily active users is still a, is an impressive number, given that there's no load shedding going on at the moment. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. No, I'm very proud of it. Honestly, I'm very happy with it.
Yeah. Now, I know a while ago, I forget when it was exactly, you also introduced a subscription option in the app. You've historically been funded with through advertising-based revenue. I'd imagine advertising is still the bulk of the revenue for the app. But what has the uptake been of the subscription service? Have people have people been signing up?
I wish I told you, but I wish I'd checked before. I guess I can check now. But it's not great. Like, honestly, it's I mean, it. I would say it's about 5% of our total revenue. So our revenue is basically broke up into three pieces. The biggest piece is, as you said, ad revenue, which of course is now smaller than during load shedding. And then another like 5% is our business API. Our business API is, we have a free tier that we provide to sort of hobbyists. And what they do is they set up their solar panels and their battery charging so that they can sort of know, okay, there's an outage or there is a load shedding coming, and sort of they can use their batteries in the right type of level to save money for their solar systems. That's sort of one of our main use cases. However, we have many businesses that also use it, mostly ISPs, and they use it to when they are getting call centers. So one of the ISPs shared the numbers for call center costs per minute, right? It's like just people phoning in, and if they can know that that user is having load shedding or having an outage, they save so much money. It's ridiculous. Like, wow. I didn't know, like, I should, we should price the business API way higher knowing that now. But anyway, so this is one of the use cases. Or another thing is security companies also use it to know if there's load shedding or an outage, to know, okay, there's, they see a break in their, I don't know, their battery for their system, the security systems. Now, it could be sabotage, or it could be something like load shedding or an outage. And they also use the API for that. So there's many use cases of the API that people are using. And that's like 5% of our revenue. But like 90% of the usage is for the hobbyists, which, of course, we as engineers, as software developers also want, right? That's sort of just something that we give away all information. And then we spend a lot of time actually preventing people from scraping our API, which is then quite funny turn of events. But anyway. And then, like I said, 90% of it is ad revenue. So 90% is like ad revenue, 5% is business API, and 5% is in-app purchases.
Right.
But the in-app purchases is just mainly to remove ads, right? There's also things like the widget, but removing the ads is sort of the main feature that in-app purchases give. And to be honest, most of our users would rather just see the ads.
Right. So what are the opportunities to expand? I mean, you've already offering the community services, but in terms of other service delivery related issues, I know in Johannesburg specifically, there have been very, very big issues with water supply this year. Have you thought about the possibility of expanding the app to include things like water, streetlights, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, sorry. We have... One of the biggest problems that we do face with other services is our load shedding areas. And the load shedding areas do not necessarily match the water areas. So your reservoir doesn't match your substation, to put it like that. So we are doing that mapping, and then we are using a lot of AI. When I say AI, we're using ChatGPT or Gemini. That's not really our own AI, to sort of... match locations that we have with locations that, for example, Rand Water has in Joburg. And then see how we can match these things. And it's okay. It's not great. The idea is just like we do with load reduction. If you're in a load reduction area, you would see, as you would see load shedding, you would see load reduction in that list. And we would like to do the same with water outages or just general issues. But it is something that we're working on, and it is more tricky than not, because there isn't the API for this. The nice thing about load shedding was there was a schedule. So you could sort of automate things around the schedule, and it's basically a very complicated Excel sheet. But with water, it's a tweet. And that makes it a little bit more tricky. And those areas are not well defined. So it is something we're working on, but it's we are sort of following the size of the problem and then trying to judge it on that. Because again, load shedding was a national problem, and that sort of makes sense. But as soon as you go to very, very specific local issues, then it becomes difficult for us because the scale is just not there.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting what you say about ChatGPT.
It's a two-person company, so we have to choose what we work on very, very carefully.
Of course. Of course. But interesting what you say about ChatGPT and Gemini. Can you expand on that a little bit about how those AI tools are actually helping you? Are they helping you? Are they actually useful?
Well, I use them personally. I use them all the time if I want to understand how glucose works in the bloodstream. I'm like, okay, I'm using that instead of going to Google, right? It's very funny because I was just speaking to somebody. It's like, if you use Gemini and you ask them questions about glucose in your blood, it will return saying, no, not a medical professional. They're not going to give you advice on that. I was like, I'm not asking for advice. I'm just asking for information. And it's very funny. You can Google that, but if you ask Gemini, they're like very cautious to give that. Well, ChatGPT they don't care. They just give you the information. So I'm a big, between Gemini and ChatGPT, I'm definitely on a ChatGPT side of usage. Okay. But we use both of them for different things. Our main usage is for example, it's not really scraping Twitter these days because they lock down that API so well. So we don't scrape Twitter, but we actually use the Twitter API or X API, I should say. And then it's still called Twitter API, by the way, last time I checked. But a Twitter API we pay
everyone
for.
Everyone calls it Twitter.
Nobody calls it X. Anyway. And then we pull the information from different municipalities, like we spoke about Joburg Water and Rand Water and all of these entities. We pull their information from the API and then put it through ChatGPT and Gemini, depending on the case. And it's been amazing. It works really well. I would recommend it. The other thing that we use it a lot for, wasn't there when we started. We, of course, there's community features. We need to prevent things like, of course, hate speech, but also just people like bad people or selling drugs, for example, all of these sort of things. We use ChatGPT and Gemini a lot of times to just check for these bad things and prevent it immediately and ban those users. And it works also great for that.
It's a policeman.
And it's really good at it. Before I was working at classified companies, and of course there are also people, selling stuff they're not allowed to sell in classified companies. And the amount of work that went into building models for that is a lot of money. And now I for what I've seen, ChatGPT does a much better job at it than most. Everything from, naked people detection. That is something people do. People do. They send penises on chat for, I guess, for the laughs. And this thing is great at detecting it. Much, much better than other things I've seen. And I don't have to look at it, which is great. It's ChatGPT and Gemini has been really great for doing these things, and much better than, building it yourself or, buying somewhere a service just for that. I was really interested. Want to look into it.
You mentioned that AI is empowered to ban users of its own accord as well, or do you guys intervene? No, it does it on its own.
We do actually have a report saying, okay, these are the users that got banned and why. And I can tell you I have to think about if I've seen a false positive. I can't think about it. It's not coming up for me. It's so good. It's really, really good. I mean, we're not banning the smallest little thing. It's okay. You need to be really sure. We put that into the prompt to make to make sure it's a strong case, not just, you know, and also repeat offenders, etc.
You're a developer. Do you use generative AI in your coding? And
definitely,
if you do,
yes.
How do you find it?
Oh, it's amazing. It's honestly the amount of time it saves, because a lot of times you do boilerplate stuff. With that, I mean, for example, you're writing a test, right? So it's just like, okay, you want to have test data. This is sort of the format. Say, for example, a weather app. You want to have like, make me weather for Cape Town, like a whole day's weather. And it's like, okay, like it generates it for you. Here's a whole payload of the data you need to build. And you can see sort of how your app then, you know, uses that data, and it makes sense. Okay, now do it for winter. Okay, here's the data for winter. It just saves so much more time than having to go write these tests yourself, for example. And this is just tests. Of course, I do not trust it blindly, just like with it before I said about Bluecloze. I wouldn't go, okay, whatever it gives me, I'm going to believe. But was there anything on the internet I would just do that with, right? Even if I would use Stack Overflow before, it's not like I'm going to copy paste and then run away. No, I'm going to, you know, try to understand the code. And it's the same with that. However, I could tell you the funny thing is Dan the other day told me he used, for these load reduction schedules, he used ChatGPT, and it's like, he has no idea what ChatGPT is doing now here. It's too complicated. And it's just like decoding the Excel, basically.
Yeah.
There are some stuff that's like, okay, this is too complicated to understand. But mostly, yeah, I'd say it's like you get it, but it just saves time.
What is ESP coded in?
So backend is in Python, and the front part is Flutter. So the
Flutter.
App is Flutter. And then we have some JavaScript and React and Next.js on the website, which that's very low traffic. Like there's nothing really on the website other than just the overview. Although we added something cool on the website, it was a very soft launch. Like we didn't market it or anything. If you go to our website, esp.info, you can actually see where there's a lot of outages being reported. So there's a map showing like a heat map with all the outages reported across the country. And it changes dynamically. Like it changes every 5 minutes.
Oh, fascinating. I'm just going to have a look at that. Get a lot of data that you could spin out potentially into maps and do interesting stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you do quite a bit of that at ESP.info?
Yeah. Yeah. We, it's exactly what we do. Right. So there's a way for you to report very quickly, like my power is down, because we see in the chat, like that's one of the main use cases. You just want to see if somebody else also doesn't have power, right? Like, is it my house only or is it somebody else? Or is it like how many people in the area is affected? So that is sort of why we have the maps. It's like, okay, it's a cool way to quickly see, okay, there is actually a big outage happening. Yeah. And it's very funny. Yeah. You can start seeing the cyclical nature of these things. So I think like 2 weeks ago, like half of Pretoria, like every day was off. And it's like, okay, this is not normal, right? There's something happening at 3 o'clock in Pretoria. Why? Maybe it was something to do with construction. Who knows? But I couldn't find the resources. Okay, this is why it's happening every day. At the same time, that's a bit strange.
Yeah, interesting. Do you find the municipalities and ESCOM itself use your website and your app and your tools to actually determine where problems are, or do they already know?
I think so. When you do report on the app, we tell you, listen, we are not integrated with your municipality, so you have to go report it. And like, then we give like the information saying, for example, if you're in Aizna, this is where you need to go and report. Or if it's the water, okay, this is where you can go report. But I don't know if they use it. I mean, our municipalities have been very friendly with us. Like even City of Cape Town has like sort of invited us for a meeting, and Joburg City has also invited us. The previous politicians that were there, they invited us also to come visit. So
it's
very friendly with us. Yeah. Previous guard.
Who knows who's going to be the mayor next week? Yeah,
we'll see.
It's a lucky pack of draw. Great. Well, Herman, it's been great to catch up with you. Before I let you go, where do you see, and I know this question is kind of dependent on what happens with load shedding, but where do you see the ESP app going in the next few years? What ultimately do you want this thing to morph into?
Well, I would like it to be a very strong community resource, right? So if you if you think about WhatsApp groups and things like that, like, of course, WhatsApp is a superior product. I love WhatsApp myself. Like, it's great. But it's the WhatsApp groups, I would say, is not perfect. WhatsApp groups, like, if you've been in a neighborhood WhatsApp group, it's not the fun place to be. There's the same personalities you find in any WhatsApp group, right? There are famous videos about this also, which I find hilarious. So that's sort of the thing that I would like to change. I would like to open up those WhatsApp groups so it's more inclusive, and also, yeah, people being able to sort of control, and anyone being able to contribute without being like hit on the head or something like this, because they're sometimes so dystopian, or those WhatsApp groups. So that would be, for me, the ideal case. Of course, we would also like to go international and things like that, but I'm also cool to be a South African app, like focused on South Africa and really, you know, being the app that people say, if you're in South Africa, that's the app you should have. I'm totally cool with that. However, we are talking to Zambia, has load shedding problems also, even called load shedding. So we might also move that there at some point, but for now, I'm like focused on Africa, so it's great.
Okay. I guess you'd need someone on the ground in those markets if you were to expand there to do the hard work of actually collating all the data.
Exactly. I think, unfortunately, data is not something that is, you know, open. If the data was open, we could probably launch it tomorrow, right? It's actually one of the funny things, like before, I think end of 2022, there was a chance of the UK having load shedding. I remember that. And they had like a whole document open and provided and everything. And we were ready. Like we were ready to launch. Like if it started in the UK, we would have been out in a day. Which of course made the app much more resilient. Like we can add a new area or a new country within 24 hours to be ready. That's also when remember everyone was saying there's new load shedding schedules coming for stage 16. Like that was a big topic. Yeah. Everyone forgot about this now. But whenever this comes, we'll be ready. You know, so these sort of things are like as soon as those schedules are coming out. So we're ready for these things. But I think as a lot of software engineers would tell you, a lot of your code people never use. like the amount of code that I've written just to throw away, it's a lot. But I learn every time, right? So, for example, we have prepaid electricity app. We have one ready. It's ready to go. It's like it's there. It'll probably never get go live ever, but it's there. It's built, and of course, you learn by doing these things. Or building new apps is something that you then use somewhere else. So it's not like totally useless, but it's one of those things that code is not something I'm very religious about, right?
Right. Well, excellent, Herman. It's always good to catch up with you, and I'm glad you're finding some time to catch up on some other projects while load shedding remains suspended. And touch wood, may it remain suspended. Yes. Although if it does come back, I'm sure you guys are going to have fun. Yeah. Herman Reritz is co-founder of the ESP app. Thanks for the chat with Tech Central, and it's always much appreciated. Thank you.
Anytime, Duncan. Thank you so much.